99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock in New York City, and the program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week following the work of the Midnight Ravers at 2 a.m. Stay tuned for Back of the Book that comes your way right here, right now.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. It looks like some Scientologists haven't flattened all their buttons after all. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things here, and you can find out a little bit more about what we're going to talk about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame in the left side of your screen. It will say at the top, latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that and you'll get to the webpage for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 85th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't reference them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story of the week. We have dropped back down to 118 followers. Yes, we have lost a follower on Twitter. Oh, this is, I think there's a big search going on for the person, and they have helicopters at, oh, wow, wow, wow. The next thrill-packed episode of the WBAI local station board meeting that you can pay rapt attention to will be held on Wednesday, April 13th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. We had an LSB meeting this past Wednesday, March 30th, but it was in executive session. The report out was that the WBAI LSB discussed confidential personnel issues. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 489,131,396 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,145,883. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 80,117,294, and the death toll in America was 980,797. So 4,330 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. This week's death rate is once again lower than last week's, although last week's was a bit of an uptick. We're talking about upticks, thousands of people dead. The BA2 subvariant of the Omicron variant of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, is becoming the dominant variant, and it's becoming the dominant variant in America right now. And the pandemic is not over. The World Health Organization has said that worldwide COVID deaths, they have leapt 40% as overall cases decline. So the deaths are up, but the overall cases are down. I think this is an artifact of people are still in the hospital. Some of them are in the hospital for months at a time, and, you know, then they're dying. So I guess at some point we had, during one of these surges, we had a bunch of people go in, and now they're, you know, they've reached end of life. And that's what's happening to a whole lot of people who are just dying here. And for America, looking at the current number, which is, by the time you hear this program, it's going to be 981,000. If we keep going at about 4,000 a week, it'll be about 4 weeks, and America will probably hit the 1 million dead from COVID-19 mark. And, of course, we know this is an undercounted number because some people, for political reasons, won't say it's COVID-19. Anyway, by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of the figures we quoted will be higher, and this was all mostly preventable.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale.
Thank you, Patty Page. And this is a story we had for last week, but it couldn't fit. We would have run over, so we had to put it off to now. In Stanley County, North Carolina, a 4-year-old 50-pound dog named Fezco was brought to the local Animal Protective Services facility by its owners. They didn't want the dog anymore. The reason was that they decided that the dog was homosexual after they saw it humping another male dog. Yeah, they didn't want to have a gay dog, so they threw him out of the house. What? Ignorance! Well, this got some publicity, and a gay couple from Indian Trail, North Carolina, the couple's names are Steve Nichols and John Wynn, and they've been together for more than 30 years, and they adopted the dog. They've renamed him Oscar, after Oscar Wilde, who was arrested on charges of sodomy and gross indecency in 1895. At his trial, the human Oscar Wilde was grilled about the phrase, quote, "the love that dare not speak its name," unquote. He was convicted and sentenced to 2 years hard labor. Oscar the dog got off a lot better. Nichols and Wynn, according to various news sources, said that when they heard the story, quote, "we looked at each other and said, quote, we gotta do something, unquote. We just thought it would make sense for the gay dog to be adopted by a loving gay family. We've been subject to that kind of bigotry and ignorance throughout our lives, and we couldn't always do anything about it." unquote. Oscar the dog had never been to a veterinarian, it turns out, and he had heartworms. So Oscar the dog is being treated for heartworms, and Mr. Nichols said the dog has, quote, been through an awful lot, but we have high hopes, and the vet is very confident that he'll be able to pull through, unquote. And yes, the gay dog. And in the Gay Activist Alliance, we used to say, bowsy wowsy. The Republican governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, refused to acknowledge the existence of trans people this past week. But he'd signed into law two pieces of legislation, one of which targets trans youth by banning trans girls from competing in school sports consistent with their gender identity. When Governor Ducey was first asked whether he believed transgender people existed, he paused for a while before saying, quote, I'm going to ask you to read the legislation and to see that the legislation that we passed was in the spirit of fairness to protect girls' sports in competitive situations, unquote. Then he said, quote, that's what the legislation is intended to do, and that's what it does, unquote. Meanwhile, activists say that Senate Bill 1165, which Ducey had just signed into law, aims to fix a problem that doesn't exist. Campaign strategist for the ACLU of Arizona, K.M. Bell, said, quote, Arizona already has policies in place around the participation of transgender athletes that, as the Arizona Interscholastic Association explained to the legislature, work just fine, unquote. Bell also said that the law, SB 1165, quote, will do nothing more than harm the mental health and physical well-being of youth across Arizona, unquote. When Governor Ducey was asked a second time whether he believed there are, quote, actual transgender people, unquote, he again gave a non-answer answer, saying he was, quote, going to respect everyone, and I'm going to respect everyone's rights, and I'm going to protect female sports, and that's what the legislation does, unquote. The Arizona director of the Human Rights Campaign, Bridget Sharp, said that his response was appalling and that, quote, it's quite shocking that he can't even address trans people or even say that he thinks they exist, unquote. The other bill that Ducey signed into law limits health care for transgender youth, even when doctors say that the treatment is medically necessary and life-saving. This type of legislation has been opposed by activists, health care professionals, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Medical Association, saying that these kinds of laws, quote, promote discrimination and do harm to students, their families, and their communities, unquote. So this moron Ducey is even saying the law he signed, which obviously the legislature there wrote and passed, it says that even if the medical treatment is life-saving and really necessary, they can't do it. This is bizarre. I hope they file lawsuits on this and that this thing gets overturned, because really this is, it goes beyond simple bad politics stuff. This is threatening the lives of especially the kids, and especially if they have homophobic parents who say, oh, no, you can't do that. And in Texas, I don't remember if we talked about this. It was one of the things we were going to talk about. I don't know if we got to it. In Texas, a judge there voided a law that required investigations of families that did medical stuff for their trans kids. So if you had a trans kid and you brought them to somebody and, you know, whatever happened with it and you had something medical going on, in Texas, they wanted to send the cops around to start interviewing you about maybe they can arrest you for this. Luckily, a judge there said, you can't do that, and stopped it. Of course, that may end up being appealed, could end up in the Supreme Court. Oh, good grief. And, you know, we'll see how it goes in the future. But Jesus Christ, these people are just awful. And here's a little bit of an echo from the past. You may remember that back in 2015, when the United States Supreme Court was deciding the case Obergefell v. Hodges, they guaranteed same-gender couples the right to marry. And there was a lot of uproar about this, mostly from the right wing and the evangelicals in this country. God, the evangelicals, what a bunch. And a lot of attention centered on the actions or inactions of a clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky, named Kim Davis. And Ms. Davis simply refused to issue marriage licenses to anyone at all in order to avoid issuing them to same-gender couples. And she cited, quote, God's authority, unquote, as her justification. She defied a court order to follow the Supreme Court ruling and spent 5 days in a local jail. She became the darling of right-wing homophobes and was used by Republican presidential primary candidates Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz as props for their unsuccessful campaigns. We all remember who won the Republican nomination for 2016. Ugh. Ms. Davis had been elected to the post of county clerk, and she lost that job in the next election. Well, this is all stuff from the past. However, last week, U.S. District Judge David L. Bunning of the Eastern District of Kentucky granted summary judgment in a civil lawsuit filed by two gay couples against her. In his decision, the judge wrote, quote, it is readily apparent that Obergefell recognizes plaintiff's 14th Amendment right to marry. It is also readily apparent that Davis made a conscious decision to violate plaintiff's right, unquote. The judge's decision also said that Ms. Davis, quote, cannot use her own constitutional rights as a shield to violate the constitutional rights of others while performing her duties as an elected official, unquote. A decision on whether she will be responsible for the hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees piled up over almost 7 years of litigation still needs to be reached. That decision will be made by a jury at a future trial. An attorney for the plaintiffs, Michael Gartland, said, quote, as the court notes in the decision, this case has been pending since 2015. They, the plaintiffs, couldn't be more happy that they're finally going to get their day in court, and they're confident justice will be served, unquote. I hope that they soak her for a great deal of money. Really, this is a terrible thing when they use their little local official thing. She's a clerk, for Christ's sakes, her little local official powers to screw over people. This is the kind of thing you get. Well, it's in Kentucky.
There seems to be a hateful theme going on here. Laws against transgendered children. Yeah. Laws against same-sex couples, you know, or would be. That's one thing that probably has set a lot of people off now. Oh, boy. Same-gender couples can get married now. Who can we use as a scapegoat next? Oh, I know. Suffer the little children.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, it's bad stuff going on here. And, you know, things are better than they used to be, but there's obviously still a lot that must be done to secure rights for everyone. So here we are in April. Merry April, everybody. And it's going to be Earth Day later on this month. And, of course, we have to watch what's going on with stuff around us and all of this. And those of us who are aware that global warming and climate change are going on are looking to see if maybe things could be mitigated a bit. They can't be stopped. This thing is a huge weight moving forward. The momentum of the climate change is gigantic. And, yeah, things are going to be changing. And so we have to mitigate it as we can. And it isn't just stuff that's going on around us. For instance, I see that there's a proposal that all housing built after, I think it's 2027 or something like that, has to be heated exclusively with electricity. That's a bad idea.
That's for New York City or the whole state?
I think it's the state.
The whole state.
I forget. It's either New York City or the state. And so this is a bad idea because it's so expensive. Heating, ohmic heating, as it's called, the ohm, after Ohm's law, which tells you how resistance, voltage, and current flow relate to each other. Ohmic heating is extremely inefficient. Basically, what happens is, for ohmic heating, you have a short circuit in the device you're using. And it's different from like a fan. For instance, with a fan, you turn that on and, yeah, the wires go through there. You take a fan motor apart, you'll notice it's one big wire going through all those things. But that one big wire is looped around. And in a fan, you would turn it on. And, yes, for a fraction of a second, you've got a short circuit, but it's very short time. And what happens is, because of the loops, a magnetic field is created. And that's what moves the fan. That's how it's a motor. The electric motor effect happens and it moves the fan around. And so what that does is it generates something called a back EMF. EMF is voltage. EMF stands for electromotive force. And so that's voltage. And so there's a short circuit to some degree, but it's being fought by the fan generating its own voltage. And so, you know, you don't have just a simple short circuit there. The back EMF is keeping things from burning out. If you were to take that same wire from the motor, and if you were to uncoil it and just leave it out and then plug it in, you would get a little light show for a second and it would pop and that would be it. It would burn out because there would be no back EMF because it's got to be coiled. It's got to be generating a magnetic field, a serious magnetic field. Well, that's what happens with a thing like a fan for cooling down. For heating things up, what you do is you take a type of wire called a nichrome wire. This is how it mostly works. You get a nichrome wire, and a nichrome is a mixture of nickel and chromium and a little bit of something else in there. And the properties of this mixture are when you make it into a wire, it resists the electricity, but not a whole lot. And as a result, the way it resists is it gets hot. When you have a toaster, that has nichrome wire in it. So you turn on the toaster and you see those things in there that get red. Those are nichrome wires. They're getting red hot. And if you just put like a copper wire in there, it would blow up because it would conduct the electricity too fast.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah, you can try it at home. And and you can it heats things up. It gets hot. And, you know, there are various ways of saying what amount of nickel, what amount of chromium, what amount of what else. Also the gauge of the wire, how thick the wire is, how long the wire is. These all determine how hot it gets. And so this is the way you heat things, mostly with electricity. But the thing is, it's always a short circuit. And a short circuit means the current is going through there pretty fast. So you're getting a lot of current going through. How are you charged? How do they charge you on your electric bill? Well, they charge you by kilowatt hour. And that's a measure of energy. Now, a kilowatt is a measure of power. But when you measure the power times the time, that is energy. And I'm not going to get into the simple math of that. It's enough. So maybe it's too much. I don't know. Anyway, you're charged by the kilowatt hour, but they can't have anything that will measure the actual power because that's expensive. So what they have is a tiny electric motor in your, well, yeah, a little electric motor in your meter, mostly. I mean, they have new ones that work a little bit differently, but it's the same principle. And it measures the current, how many amperes are going in. And then they just multiply it by the amount of current they claim they're sending you. And there you have the power. So current times voltage equals power. All right. So the current is going to be going through at a very high clip, and that's how they bill you. And so, oh boy, I don't see how this is going to work out, because people in buildings built after 2027 are going to have these gigantic electric bills because the houses have got to be heated electrically. And how else are they going to heat them? Electricity generates heat in certain ways, and it all takes current. I don't know if they can find some way to use waste heat, but what else would they be doing with it? I suppose they could have like neon lights or something, but and take the waste heat off that, but or incandescent lights, which, gee, basically are still dropping voltage across a wire and, you know, producing heat that way. Although with the light bulb, the old incandescent light bulbs, the heat wasn't what you wanted. You wanted only the light. But I don't know how they're going to handle this, because the electric bills for heating are going to be gigantic for people.
They did not explain in any of the articles you've seen about this how they're going to make this happen.
Well, you mean the practical engineering and science about it?
Yeah.
No, they didn't say anything about it, just it's going to be heated electrically. Now, maybe there's some science I missed about. Maybe there's some new way of generating heat with electricity that doesn't involve a hell of a lot of current, but I don't know. I haven't seen it. So as far as I know, they're going to have to basically use nichrome wire at some point or something similar to that. You're going to, one way or another, be having a lot of current going into making the heat. And that's going to cost a bundle of money. However, that's still our very local stuff. There are other things that are happening that are in many ways bigger than our having to spend a hell of a lot of money on electricity. There's growing concern about the discovery recently that both the North and South Poles have been getting a lot warmer than had been expected. We knew that global warming was happening, the climate was changing, and the North and South Pole were getting warmer, but oh boy, it's a lot warmer than the scientists had expected. Antarctica was experiencing temperatures 70 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than usual as part of what's been called, quote, an unprecedented heat wave, unquote, in Antarctica. And so this is a big deal. It's going to have effects. I was going to originally say in this piece it was going to have effects. However, it looks like it may have had some of its effect already, because an ice shelf that was about 460 square miles in size, which is larger than all of New York City, has collapsed in East Antarctica. And this is important because East Antarctica, which has been the coldest location on the planet, has been considered stable, and some people even thought it was more resistant to the effects of global warming. Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute ice scientist Catherine Walker said, quote, "We probably are seeing the result of a lot of long-time increased ocean warming there. It's just been melting and melting," unquote. Meanwhile, University of Minnesota ice scientist Peter Neff said, quote, "The Glenser-Conger ice shelf presumably had been there for thousands of years, and it's not ever going to be there again," unquote. And yeah, Glenser-Conger is, there are actually two glaciers right there. And the ice shelf that was right next to them has now broken off and is going to float out to sea. And the issue here is this. I think we talked about this a bit some time back. I read about this in Scientific American. And those who don't like the fact that I quote Scientific American, well, I'm going to again. The issue is the ice shelf actually serves the purpose of slowing down and maybe even preventing the ice from Antarctica from slipping into the sea. What happens is it gets in there, and first of all, there's a lot of ice there. And an ice shelf means it's already floating on the seawater. And what happens is it's thick enough that it kind of digs in, and the ice is dammed up, basically, partly from just the sheer weight of the ice in the ice shelf, and partly because it digs in a bit to the bottom of the ocean around the area. And so it's a little bit of a dam. When an ice shelf like that cracks and goes away, well, that pressure against the flowing glaciers lets up. And now the glaciers are free to completely move, and they keep going. And it's been shown that, of course, absent that pressure from the ice shelf, the glaciers accelerate their march to the sea. And so this is happening all over Antarctica. It's been getting studied a lot because it happens all over. And one of the things that happens now is water now seeps up between the rock of the Antarctic continent and the bottom of the glaciers. Seawater gets in there, and the seawater is obviously warmer than the ice, and so it does a lot of melting. And because of, basically it's capillary action that does a lot of this, and it seeps in, even if it has to go slightly uphill, and it can go in for quite a ways underneath the ice. And besides melting more of the ice, it also serves as a lubricant, and it greases the skids, so to speak, and the ice can accelerate going to the sea even faster. So these things all build on each other. And now in East Antarctica, the ice there is going to be heading for the sea faster than they had thought it was going to. So this is a rather serious problem, because although the sea level will not rise because 460 square miles of ice has now broken off and floating around in the sea, because it was already floating, there's now going to be more ice coming down into the sea, and also water, because while water seeps up, water seeps out, and the ice melts, and oh boy, it used to be glaciers, we generally thought, was just a big chunk of ice, and then it was discovered, after a while, especially after it became blatantly obvious that there are little rivers and creeks in the ice, and it's melted ice. One way or another, the ice melts and it runs off. So in Greenland, this is especially noticeable because you've got these basically these fire hoses of water spraying out of the glacier on Greenland. And oh boy. So yes, so we have this going on, and this is a serious thing. And oh boy, we got to be careful here, folks. Cross your fingers. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. And, of course, the Russian invasion of Kyiv, of Ukraine, continues. And Russia has said they're not going to go after Kyiv, the capital of Ukraine. But then they bombard it. They're still bombarding it. And they're sending these missiles, these ballistic missiles, into apartment houses where people just live. And they're just bombarding everything. And Mariupol, you look at that, and as I said last time, it looks a lot like the bombed-out cities at the end of World War II. Berlin or Hamburg at the end of World War II, and parts of London and much of Coventry in the earlier part of World War II, the way they got bombed out there. So they're still bombing them, and they say, yeah, here's the safe corridor to leave. Then they even turn people back at a checkpoint, or they start shooting at them. And there are reports of things breaking down among the Russian army, things just not working anymore. The rather shocking revelation I heard, and again, this is all stuff that's coming through the fog of war, and, you know, somebody may have gotten something wrong, but if this is right, it's shocking. 60% of the rockets the Russians are firing don't explode. That's a terrible rate. I mean, you're always going to get something like that, an artillery shell or an artillery rocket. They don't explode. A small, small percentage don't explode because, you know, things happen. But 60% means they're not being made right, which is good for the Ukrainians because they're not getting blown up by them so easily. But that indicates how things work in Russia. It's slapdash. And there's a report of one tank crew just giving up and giving the Ukrainians their tank and saying, we don't want to be involved in this anymore. And you've got reports of crews wrecking their equipment so they can't advance. There's also the idea that they're hungry and there's not enough fuel. And then there's this other report that possibly, Putin is arresting some of his aides. Well, if you have a military adventure and it's supposed to be your big super duper country against a smaller country that doesn't have nearly the military you have, and this should be something that goes pretty shortly, well, if you are there a month later when the plan had been to take it in 3 days, heads should roll at that point because obviously your military organization is seriously failing. But we don't know if this is happening with Putin. There's a rumor that this is happening. And are his big deal aides under house arrest? We've also heard that something like 7 generals of the Russian army have been killed in this thing so far. And so, yeah, this whole thing is not going well. It's not going according to Putin's plans. And, I guess we're going to see more of this. But what we do know is that the people of Ukraine are suffering horribly from this invasion.
Yes. It's a pity he is so fond of his own country's history that he doesn't get on his horse and go and lead the troops into battle, because that's a time-honored tradition.
Yeah, why doesn't he get on that horse and, you know, he rides around without a shirt on and go say, come on, troops, follow me. He's not doing that, is he?
It's too bad, because that seemed like that would be a very good thing for the Ukrainian people.
Let's encourage him. Vlad, I know you listen to this program, Vlad. Look, it'll be really great. You can get another photo op of you with your shirt off on a horse, and you can really be, you can use a sword. You can hold a sword up high and say, troops, follow Miski, and have them come after you as you ride toward the Ukrainians. Yes, it'll be wonderful. You can have a lot of people taking your picture as you do this. Vlad, I encourage you to do this. And here's a little interesting thing that's come up this past week. Nebraska Republican Congressman Jeff Fortenberry has resigned from Congress after his conviction of a felony. The felony was lying to FBI agents. He said, quote, due to the difficulties of my current circumstances, I can no longer effectively serve. Unquote. Yeah, he's going to jail, the son of a bitch. Yeah, oh, the Republicans are the law and order party. Yeah, all of this. This guy's going to jail because he's lying to the FBI about having foreigners contributing to his campaign. And, you know, this is all this kind of thing going on here. The Republicans are such money grubbers. Trump is really bad. I read about, what's her name, Sheila Craigshead, who was the official White House photographer during the major White House photographer for the Trump administration. And she was going to put out a book, as these White House photographers do. And she asked Trump if he would write a foreword to it, as the other former presidents do. And he got back to her and said, oh, I can't do that because I'm going to do the book using her photographs. Now, he can do that because she's paid by the government to be the photographer. What she does is in the public domain. In fact, the things people would have seen on my website and in the various graphics I put up for upcoming programs and archived programs on BAI.org, WBAI.org, those things are overwhelmingly from Ms. Craigshead. And so, because they're public domain. And I don't want to get my ass sued off. And I don't want to get BAI sued off. So he can do it, but what a weasel. And he's selling these for a large price. The publishing company that he's working with didn't exist before October. And, who's one of the big principals in the publishing house that didn't exist before October and which is now going to basically preempt the White House photographer with the book? Well, the big guy in that is Donald Trump Jr. Oh, man, what a weasel. Yeah, the Republicans are just money-grubbing cheaters. Ugh. And as we all have been hearing, Clarence Thomas's wife has been involved in the Trump big lie about his not losing the 2020 election. And then she's really involved. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi suggests Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's wife participated in a coup. And yeah, I think she probably did. And Pelosi said, quote, it's up to an individual justice to decide to recuse himself if his wife is participating in a coup, unquote.
Oh, man.
Jeez. And of course, he's been voting on Supreme Court on the January 6th committee subpoenaing things. And in one of them, it was 8-1. And he was the one who said, oh, no, don't allow the committee to see the stuff from Trump. Well, obviously, he had a severe conflict of interest and didn't give a rat's zinger. So, oh, man. Yeah, he was bad. We knew he was bad. Now we see how very corrupt he is. Well, we knew he was corrupt. I mean, you know, Ms. Hill was telling the truth.
Yes, she was.
Anyway, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said, quote, I do think he should recuse himself. I think there should be some kind of code of ethics for Supreme Court justices, unquote. There isn't one. They can do, oh no, they can do anything. A Supreme Court justice, you know, can do goddamn near anything, although they can be impeached. A Supreme Court justice can be impeached. It's so tough. Can you, I imagine that since he's a right winger, he could probably go out and, you know, do all sorts of horrible things. And he could probably say, hey, give me $5 million and I'll vote this way and get the $5 million and vote that way. And he probably couldn't be impeached because the Republicans in Congress would say, oh, no, we're not going to impeach him.
So there's no code of conduct.
No.
One of the three branches of government, and there's no code of conduct.
Not, well, okay, the branches of government, the other courts have codes of conduct. Like federal courts, they all have codes of conduct.
And it's...
Supreme Court doesn't. So it's only the Supreme Court.
So it stops when it gets to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
There's a code of conduct for the president, vice president, Congress critters...
The lower courts?
Yeah. All the I can't say that word. Judiciary.
And the people who work as dog catchers and various other things. Yes,
your
all sorts.
Your kindergarten teacher.
Yeah.
But not the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
This seems like an oversight to me.
The guys who decide the law are above the law, it sounds like.
Yes.
Wow.
What is the law? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Gee, if we had time, I'd see if I could pull that quote out of the movie. Anyway, we can't do that. But yes, they don't have a code of ethics. Bunch of...
I'll say.
And that Alex Jones conspiracy hoaxer idiot has been avoiding appearing for a deposition in the case against him for his claims that the Sandy Hook massacre was faked. He's been doing his program while saying he's too sick to do the deposition. Oh, man. Did he think he was going to get away with that? Well, I guess he did think he was going to get away with that. He has doctors saying, oh, he's too sick to go and be deposed. But he's okay to rant and rave and jump up and down on his podcast. He's already been found guilty, Jones has, of, you know, slander and all of that. And now they have to have a trial to determine how much he has to pay those parents that he maligned. This week, Judge Barbara Bellis had enough because he's obviously avoiding this and he's going to try and run it out, probably going to try and hope Trump gets back in and gives him a pardon. Anyway, Judge Barbara Bellis has started to fine him. The penalties will begin at $25,000 per weekday, beginning Friday, which means as you're listening to this on Saturday, it started yesterday, and the fines will increase by $25,000 per weekday until he appears for the deposition. And I think they're also making him go to Connecticut now. We're going to let him do it in Texas, where he lives. But now they say, no, you're screwing around with us. You come to Connecticut and do this, you idiot. And so there he goes. And I think some people have suggested he go to jail for this. That might be a better idea. And now, poetry. Loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough. and stands about the woodland ride, wearing white for Eastertide. Now of my 80 years and 10, 20 will not come again, and take from 70 springs a score, it only leaves me 50 more. And since to look at things in bloom, 50 springs are little room, about the woodlands I will go, to see the cherry hung with snow. Yeah, that was A.E. Housman, a selection from his book, A Shropshire Lad, published in 1896. Yeah, when I first read that poem, I was a teenager still, and, 20, that's a ways away, and I thought about that and said, geez, look at that, you know, he's thinking ahead there, and yeah, it got me to think about things like, how much of my life is gone already, which is not something you generally do when you're a teenager, but I started thinking that way, partly because of that particular poem. Later on, when I was really 18 or 19 and into poetry and had discovered that A.E. Housman was a gay poet, although a deeply closeted gay poet, I was sort of interested, and I ended up reading all of A Shropshire Lad and was interested in poetry at that point in time. And, in fact, I used to write it for a while. Don't do that anymore. And so I was looking at it and saying, geez, 20, that's an interesting age there, because 20 is a good piece of 70. It's not half of it, of course. It's a good chunk of it. And we also had, of course, the Turtles with a song called Darling Come Home Soon, and the guy in it is, I think, 19, and one of the lines in the song is, a quarter of my life is almost gone. And so these things got me thinking about, yeah, the finiteness of my young then life. And so I had various thoughts about that, and I was certainly aware of my mortality much of the time. It was all, for me, a part of that transition time between when you're just a kid and when you're starting to become an actual adult, or at least you're in the young adult stage between full-blown adulthood and being a kid, which is what you are if you're a teenager of a certain age. And so, yeah, I was all wrapped up in that stuff. And yeah, now, of course, I'm at the other end of that. In fact, I have already used up my 80. And how many more of mine will not come again? Well, of 80, it's all gone for me now. And I guess I'm living out the bonus here, the 20th and 21st century medical advance bonus that so many of us have gotten. I also still look at it as, yeah, try to enjoy things. Try to enjoy things even though they're not optimal. In the poem, you know, he likes the look of cherry blossoms on cherry trees, and they are very nice to look at. And I think they're nice to look at. But I also get the idea of, make what you can while you can. Look at the cherry tree when it's covered with snow. Maybe that looks kind of nice, too. It's that time of year. We have the cherry blossoms blooming, except where they're getting either frozen out or blasted off the trees by difficult weather. And so I thought I'd bring up this springtime poem that I kind of like. And yeah, the hopping oyster is around here somewhere, I think. Oh, well. Well, that's been it for Back of the Book. We'll be back here next week. Coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
And it's going to get a little bumpy in terms of weather. We've got some weather going on right now, but it's warming. It's getting warmer. The sun is setting at a good time. And you should go on out if you can. smell the spring in the air. Little things are going to start budding and all of this. And above all, remember what that watching out for the ice in Antarctica Dormouse said.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, host of Exploration, which reports on the impact of science on society, which is usually heard every Wednesday evening. First of all, Exploration is moving. That's right. From now on, it'll be broadcast on Saturdays at noon. So write that down. Mark that down on your calendar. Our time slot has been moved to Saturdays at noontime. Second, let me emphasize the importance of supporting WBAI with whatever you can afford. One way is to become a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member in the name of Exploration for $10, $15 or more a month by calling 212-209-2950. Now, write that number down. It's 212-209-2950. Now, another way is to go to our website, WBAI.org. Click on to the WBAI button on the upper right-hand corner of the website. So please now, call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and make that pledge for social change.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Break him with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.
I believe that we have got to mobilize a larger movement to reclaim the democracy.
Radio broadcaster Bob Law.
Some of y'all have underestimated the value and the appeal of white supremacy. And you have no idea how strong white privilege and white supremacy is.
Tune in to From the Streets with Bob Law, which gives voice to a wide range of black and progressive political and cultural perspectives. That's 11 to noon Saturdays, here over listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
Hard work is how we support ourselves and our families. The jobs we do are a big part of who we are. And our jobs keep America going, yet the job site is where we have the least power. Many of us voiceless as corporations gamble away our health and our family's future just to feed their greed. It's time for the working class majority, for you and me, to regain our voices, to turn up the volume, assert our collective power, and to organize. Join me, Rick Smith, every Saturday night